10. After her husband and Pat had left the apartment to go to the liquor store, Rachel went into the kitchen and washed dishes. 10 or 15 minutes passed, and then she dried her hands and walked to the front door. "They're not coming back," she said, standing at the door. Jim Briskin was slow to agree. "Sure they are," he said. "No," she shook her head. "I knew this was going to happen sooner or later, but I thought it would be with the different guys, Grimmelman and those people." Jim opened the door and started up the steps. "They must have gone off in her car."
"Where are you going?"
"Hell," he said. "I'll try her apartment."
"Let him go ahead," Rachel said.
Her eyes were dry. He was amazed at her self-control.
"She's very lovely, and look how grown up she is. If he wants to, then he should. What difference does it make if they go ahead or not? I couldn't keep him here.
Could you have kept her here?" "No," he said. But he did not come back inside. He remained on the steps. The door opened behind him.
"You can't control other humans," Rachel said. "You can talk to them, but it doesn't make any difference. Maybe in little things, or if they believe it already. Anyhow, I'm glad she's so nice."
He said, "I'll kill her." He meant it. He could feel her neck between his hands.
"Why? You know she's had a lot to drink. You know Art and I have had trouble. He wanted to go out. There's so many things he hasn't done, and he wants to do them. He's too young. I was the only girl he dated. I guess I'm the only girl he ever... however you say it. People say it different ways. I don't know any good way."
"There isn't," he said. "Not in a situation like this." He blamed himself. It was his fault. "Rachel," he said, coming back into the apartment. "I did it. I brought her here. And I knew she was in a state. I knew she was ready to try anything. We both were."
"It's a bad thing for you," Rachel said, "since you're in love with her."
"Look," he picked up his coat from the chair, "you stick around here. I'll go over to her place and try to round them up. I'll see you later." Without waiting, he left the apartment and went along the path to the sidewalk. Pat's car was gone, all right. He hailed a taxi and gave the driver the address of her apartment. The lights in her windows were off, and nobody answered his rings. Another tenant entered the building using his key for the main door, and Jim went into the lobby behind him. Upstairs, at Pat's door, he knocked and then tried the knob. Still there was no answer. He listened, but he heard nothing. Going back downstairs to the street, he searched in vain for a sign of the Dodge. They were not here at her apartment. Where else, then? The only remaining place was the radio station. The time was 12:30, and Hubble would have locked up. Pat had a key, and she and Art would have the station to themselves. Again he flagged a cab. As it took him toward Geary Street, he thought to himself that at least he could pick up his car. It was still parked in the cab stand in front of the station. When he had paid the driver, he saw that his car was gone. The cab stand was empty. And, peering up, he saw no lights in the top-floor windows of the McLaughlin building. He walked around to the parking lot, and still there was no sign of his car and no sign of Pat's Dodge. A drugstore down the street was open. He entered it and, in a phone booth, called the station's number. The phone rang on and on. At last he gave up. They were not there either. He located the number of the Kearney Street police station and called. "My car's been stolen," he said. "I left it parked in front of where I am, and now it's gone."
"Just a moment," the police voice said.
Clicks deafened him, and then, after an endless pause, the voice returned.
"What is your name?"
He gave them his name.
"It must have happened within the hour," he said.
He felt absolutely futile.
"The make and license number?"
He gave that, too.
"Just a moment, sir."
Again, there was a wait.
"Your car was towed off," the police voice said. "It was parked in a hack stand, and the cab company phoned in a complaint."
"Oh," he said. "Then where is it?"
"I don't know. You'll have to inquire about it tomorrow morning. Be here at Kearney Street at 10:30, and arrangements will be made to return it to you."
"Thanks," he said, hanging up. Without a car, he was more helpless than ever. He walked out onto the sidewalk, and when a cab passed, he waved to it. Again he was riding in a cab, and again he had given Pat's address. In his mind, he was positive that they would show up there. Maybe, he thought, they had gone for a ride. When the cab led him off before the apartment building, he saw the Dodge, moist and gleaming, parked by itself in a slot near the entrance. He rang the bell by her name, but there was no response. Again he waited. Presently a figure appeared on the other side of the door. A heavy-set man stepped out of the building, glanced at Jim, and went on. He caught the door before it shut. Somebody was always going in or out. He climbed the stairs to her floor. The door to her apartment was closed, and no light showed. He knocked. She did not answer, but he knew that this time they were here. Finally, he tried the knob. The door was unlocked. "Pat," he said, opening the door. The room was dark.
"I'm in here," she said.
He went into the bedroom. "Just you?" he demanded, fumbling to find the lamp.
"Don't turn the light on."
She was lying on the bed.
"Wait a second."
In the darkness, she rose up and moved. He was aware of her motions.
"Okay," she said. "I wanted to put something on."
Her voice was relaxed, and she sounded drowsy.
"When did you get here? I was asleep."
"Where's Art?" he said, snapping the light on. She lay stretched out in the bed, wearing a slip. Her feet were bare. Beside the bed, on the chair, was a neat pile of her clothing. Under the slip, she had on nothing at all. Her hair, dark and heavy, lay spread out on the pillow. He had never seen her so lacking in turmoil, so content. Smiling, she said,
"I sent him home. I gave him money for a cab."
"Well," he said, "you've destroyed their marriage."
"No," she said. "I've been thinking about it. I'm a girl he went with before his marriage. Do you see? This is what he missed. Do you know that Rachel is the first girl he ever took out?"
"I took you over there," he said, "and you wrecked those kids. You went right to work." Sitting up, she said,
"No, you're wrong.
You wanted to go to bed with somebody, and you couldn't go to bed with me, so you went to bed with him." Pat said,
"It isn't just him. When I saw Rachel, I wanted to have her. Try to understand. I'm in love with both of them, and so are you. When I saw her, I wanted to make love to her. I wanted to kiss her and pet her. I wanted to take her to bed and fondle her. But of course I couldn't. But it doesn't matter which one of them. I'm glad you took me over there, because now I've finally come back to life. It's the same with you, too. Isn't that so?"
"Christ," he said, "don't include me in this."
"They're our children," she said.
He sat down on the bed beside her. In a sense, she was right. He could not deny what she had said.
"They hold us together," she said,
gazing up at him, her arms loose at her sides. Under her slip, her small, unsupported breasts hung forward. At each, pressing against the slip, a dab of shadow rose and fell. Her face had a scrubbed look, and her makeup was gone.
"I can't bring myself to trust you, and I can't come to you because of that. And you haven't been able to trust me, have you? Neither of us has any trust in the other. But we trust them. You knew this was my fault, didn't you?"
"Yes," he said.
"That's what I mean. For years we've had no confidence in each other. But we love them, and we believe in everything about them. So we can go to them. They're the only persons in the world we can really go to. I think we get to each other through them. We can let go with them. We can get the peacefulness we need."
"What a miserable rationalization," he said. "You ought to be weeping in agony instead of lying there."
"I'm very happy," she said. "I feel close to you. Don't you feel you've been with me? It was you I was with, here, not somebody else. Don't you remember how we used to lie together afterward? Remember when we were up in the cabin, how we used to just lie around? I guess we were exhausted. But there were no tensions. We were just limp and fagged out. I always felt closer to you afterward, even more than when we were actually doing it. To me, doing it is..."
She was silent a moment.
"Just a means, isn't that so? God, and at first, before I got my diaphragm. When you used those awful things, we were so far apart. It wasn't until afterward that we could come together, that we could lie around.
I remember what you said, he said.
About what? Oh, yes, those things you used.
Before we found out we didn't have to use anything. She said,
it was like having a length of green plastic garden hose inside me. I never got anything from that. Did you?
No, he said. Not completely.
What about now? Have I cheated you again? Do you feel that way?
She caught hold of his arm.
We're going to have to go on reaching each other through them. You know that, don't you? We're too involved now. We can't break away.
Where were you? He said. Earlier I came by.
We drove up to Twin Peaks and parked.
Why didn't you do it there?
If the police caught us, they'd send me to prison or something. And anyhow, it's ugly in a car. I wanted to do it here, where you were, the other night.
You're really heartless, he said.
No, she said, I'm not. You'll see. You'll get to me through the girl. We'll live through them.
What about them? Her eyes rose to focus on him.
This will be a great and tremendous thing for them. It already is.
How do you figure that out?
Because, she said, they love us. They admire us. We're what they want to be. We'll all merge together, the four of us. We'll be complete. We'll be able to walk around on the face of the earth again. And we can throw out the trivial people, Bob Posen and all of them. I mean it. I feel so much love for you. It's inside me, and I feel you got to it tonight.
If I did, he said, I don't know it. I was somewhere else at the time.
Hand me my clothes, she said. Would you?
He gave her the pile of clothes. Still lying propped up on the pillow, she sorted through them. She untangled her underclothes and stockings.
I'm going on with this, she said.
She hugged the clothes to her breast.
It's going to save both of us, and I'm not going to give it up. Tonight I found what we needed. You knew that, or you wouldn't have brought me there.
That was such a mistake, he said. Such a terrible goddamn mistake.
You know I'm right.
He said, this is just a lot of hot air to justify taking that kid and seducing him.
Yes, she said. I guess that's what I did.
Now sitting up, she bent forward and tugged her slip off over her head. She stood up, naked. Her body, smooth and pale, disappeared into her underclothes, and then she was buttoning her dress.
If it was wrong, she said, shaking her hair back from her eyes, I wouldn't feel like this. I wouldn't feel so completely good.
A length of green garden hose, he said.
What's that? You?
Standing up on tiptoe, she kissed him on the mouth.
No, you were perfect. Everything I could want. Everything I ever hoped for.
That kid, he said.
That kid, she said, was you. Still is you.
Is the girl safe? He said. At the dresser, she brushed her hair with a hairbrush, her head down, her arms raised.
They're both safe. So are we. We're in together. We can't menace them, can we? How is this a menace? Have I taken anything away from him? Have you taken anything from her?
No, he said, and I'm not going to. She had stopped brushing her hair.
Jim, she said, if this doesn't heal you and me, then nothing ever will. Do you understand? Do you see that?
I see, he said, that after you finish messing around here and wrecking these kids' marriage and lives, you're going to say that's it, and you're going back and marry Bob Posen.
I won't marry him, she said, under any circumstances, whatever happens.
Thank God for that, he said.
If this doesn't work out, I don't know what I'll do. Anyhow...
She tossed down her hairbrush and ran over to him. Her eyes were bright with joy.
I'm so happy. It was like nothing on earth. He just never got tired or wore out the way we used to. We could have gone on forever, all night and all day tomorrow and on, not even eating or sleeping, just going on forever.
How about your job? His tone made the coloring glow vanish from her. She finished dressing, and then she said,
How's Rachel?
Okay.
Did she say anything?
Not much. Pat said,
I'm a little scared of her.
I don't blame you.
Would she do anything?
I haven't any idea. But, he said, I'm glad I'm not in your shoes. He patted her on the back. Think about that for a while.
She's just a kid, Pat said. She's only 16.
But in her voice was a thread of concern.
That's silly. She'll mope for a while, like you. But my God, he's going back to her. Does she think this is going to last forever? It's not.
He said, we'll see. Leaving her apartment, he walked downstairs. When he got home to his own apartment, the phone was ringing. Leaving the hall door open, with his key in the lock, he crossed the dark, cold living room and groped on the table at the end of the couch. Hello? He said, finding the receiver. An ashtray tumbled to the floor, disappearing from sight.
This is Pat.
She was crying, and he could barely understand her.
I'm sorry, Jim. I don't know what to do. I'm so unhappy.
Softening, he said, Don't feel bad. It can probably be patched up.
I wish we hadn't gone over there. I didn't mean to get involved with him.
It wasn't your fault, he said. It was his fault, not hers.
They're both so sweet, Pat said.
She was blowing her nose and undoubtedly wiping her eyes. Better go to bed, he said. Get some sleep. You have to go to work tomorrow.
Do you forgive me?
Don't be silly, he said.
Do you?
Of course. She said,
I wish we could get along. It's so miserable. What do you think will happen? Is Rachel out gunning for me? Do you think she'll be after me?
Go to bed, he repeated.
I guess you don't want to come back here tonight, even for a while.
I can't, he said. The cops towed away my car.
I could get you in my car.
Go to bed, he repeated. I'll see you in a day or so. I'll call you up.
Is it too late for me to call her tonight?
If I were you, he said, I'd stay away from them.
All right,
Pat said. He hung up, and then he went stiffly into the bathroom and turned on water for a shower.